speaker is Samuel Ackerman. Some of you will remember Sam because he used to work in the youth department, didn't you?
I did indeed. It's a long time ago now.
Quite clearly the best year of his whole life, wasn't it?
It's pretty close.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, I suppose.
And probably working for one of the greatest guys he's ever worked for. Jesus. Yeah, you're all ahead of me. Over to you, brethren.
Thank you very much, sir. Okay. Do you mind?
Yeah, all right.
Cheers, buddy. Right. Okay. Not Mark's personal collection. Alex, can I get you to hand these out? Thank you very much, buddy. Right. Okay. I'll tell you in a second when I want you to hand them out. All right. Okay. So I've heard from Mark and Alex that the last few weeks that you've had parables, he's got some of you to come up here and act them out. Is that true? Maybe. Well, I'm afraid to say I'm not going to call you up to act them out this week. I've mixed things up a little bit this week. And so I'm going to read you two stories. And then Alex is going to go around with a set of questions. So I want you into groups of, I don't actually know how many there are. Any idea? 10-ish. I can't. Okay. Groups of five? Okay, cool. Fantastic. Okay, so I'm going to read these stories out. And then you're going to get into your groups and you're going to discuss the questions. Okay. So here's the first one. Ooh. So here's the first one. A woman goes to a cart boot sale. She has no particular thing in mind to buy. So she set up her stall. She's sort of trying to get rid of a bit of junk, as you do at a cart boot sale, if you've ever been. They're not the most entertaining of things. So, you know, you're standing at your stall a while, you get a bit bored. And she goes, you know what, I'm going to go for a wander around the stores because no one's coming to my stall. So I'm going for a wander. And she wanders over to one stall. Has a look. Nothing there that takes a fancy. She wanders over to another stall. Nah, nothing there either. She's about to turn and go back to her own stall when suddenly out the corner of her eye, she sees something twinkling. Something just catches the sunlight. And she goes, oh, what's that? So she wanders over to where she saw the shine. And this is a stall that's right out in the corner of the field. All the other stalls are sort of more towards the centre of the field. But this one's right out at the very edge. And she wanders over. The stall owner is in the middle of a conversation with the person next to him. So she's trawling around, she's looking through, trying to see what it was that made the sparkle. However, when she suddenly sees in front of her a ring that looks like that. Exactly. And she's like, that's incredible. It's a ring. Considering the rest of the stuff that's on the table, this is the best thing on there by a country mile. And she's ecstatic. Because, let's be honest, what self-respecting person wouldn't want a ring like that? Actually, if you look quite closely, that says Cartier on it, which is a very big manufacturer of diamond rings. So you know it's authentic when you see something like that. And so she's ecstatic and runs off to go and get a set of money. Now, the store owner is just sitting there when this woman comes running up to her and goes, here, take my car. And the store owner is absolutely shocked. Obviously, you're going to agree when someone offers you an entire car for your stall at a car boot sale, right? Like, you'd be silly not to. I'll come on to that. Okay. And so the store owner is shocked but agrees. And the person then leaves with the whole clump of material but has also got the diamond ring in that pack. Okay, so that's the first story. The second story. Now, a comic collector is on a business trip. And he's got a bit of spare time before he has to catch his return flight home. So he wanders downtown into an auction house that he knows specializes in rare comics. And, you know, he wanders over to the auctioneer and goes, hey, pal, do you know if you've got any rare comics coming in the next few days or so? And as it happens, he finds out that in a few days' time, a copy of Action Comics number 1 is coming in. Now, for those of you who don't know, this is the comic where Superman makes his first ever appearance. So I know, right? I know, right? I was blown away too. But in the comics world, this is a big deal. I don't know, mate. I think he's the guy with the tie. The guy with the tie. But basically, this is a big deal in the comic world. This is huge. I'll tell you why in a second. Upon hearing this, the collector sort of is, after recovering from the shock of hearing this news, leaves the auction house and goes out and makes all sorts of arrangements to sell his entire collection of comics, most of the furniture in his house, and anything else that he thinks he really doesn't need anymore at all. And a couple of days later, he comes back, and the auction happens. And he's lucky enough to win the copy of the comic. Now, can you all get into your groups? And Alex will run around with the questions. One more minute, guys. Okay. Fantastic. Right. I am going to ask my able assistant here to run around and get the answers off you. Okay. So, for the first question, and now this is going to be interesting because I don't actually know what the questions are because I don't have a sheet in front of me anymore. Oh, cool. Fantastic. Thank you, Alex. Okay. So, question the first. Which parables were the stories that I told you modern reworkings of? Any ideas?
Oh, it literally says on the sheet, Hidden Treasure and Pearl of Great Price.
Whoopsie! made a faux pas there. well spotted. Yeah, well done. It has, actually. It really has. That's unfortunate. Okay, so... Okay. So how did you think they worked as modern retellings? Anyone can answer. If they're bad, that's fine. I don't mind that. How did they work as modern retellings of the parables?
Yeah, we don't really think they worked.
You didn't think they worked. Fair enough.
Because we didn't really understand what was happening. And then I realized, sorry. And then we kind of got it, I think.
You're right there, Maddie.
Yeah,
do you want
to
drink water?
It's because I just had a breadstick. Right, basically, so we thought it was that... You either give up loads of little things for that one great thing, like Jesus,
right.
Or you give up that one great thing, like Jesus, for like all these little insignificant things, like the ring. Although it wasn't really insignificant, but it was. So, yeah.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. Okay, let's move on to the second question. Oh, Matt's got his hand up.
Oh,
thanks, Matt. I'll pay you later. Fantastic. Okay, so... Emma's got her hand up as well. We'll let Emma have a say.
If you were that crazy about comics to buy like this great comic, why would you give up all your other comics?
Ah, that's the point. Getting to the crux of the matter. Pardon the pun. Anyway, okay. So let's rewind. Okay, so you know what the parables are. Okay. So what did you think of the actual biblical parables when you read them? What went through your mind? Well, okay. That's true. That's a good point. Do you guys all know the biblical parables roughly when it's said on the sheet? Okay, if you don't know the parables, that's fine. That's why we're studying. Okay, fair enough. I shall quickly read them, and then I just want your first thoughts, rather, on what you hear. Okay, so, the parable of the hidden treasure. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and then in his joy went and sold all that he had and bought that field. Okay, so that's the parable of the hidden treasure. Now, the parable of the pearl of great price. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant looking for fine pearls. When he found one of great value, he went away and sold everything he had and bought it. Okay. So now, with those parables in mind, what do you think of them? When you've just heard them, fresh off the bat, what do you think? What's the first thing that springs to mind? No wrong answers.
Like, it costs quite a bit. I'd not kind of thought about it, but it, like, my whole car for a ring costs quite a bit.
Yeah.
That's my simple thought.
It's true. Okay. Fair enough. Okay. I think we'll leave the other questions until we've started. Okay. Just for your interest, the ring that you saw appear on the screen was the ring of actress Grace Kelly when she got engaged to Prince Rainer, who's royalty of, I think it's Monaco, but I'm not sure. But anyway, she was a famous actress in the 50s, and the estimated worth of that ring today is $4.06 million, or £2.78 million. So when I said that was the ring that the person saw on the car boot sale table, yeah, exactly. So that's kind of where I was going with that idea in that parable. And funnily enough, Action Comics number one was sold on eBay in an auction for $3.21 million. £2.2 million. So this kind of stuff is, there's a reason why I picked those kind of things, and you'll understand why I chose to rewrite the parables a bit like that as I go a bit deeper. Now, first and foremost, I want to give you a bit of context about the parables themselves as you find them in the Bible. Now, chapter 13 of Matthew, which is where those are found, those two are found in verses 44, 45 to 46. In some Bibles, they're separated out by a heading. In others, they're grouped together. In the NIVs that we have at church, they're actually lumped together into one bit. But what's really interesting is that there is a little series of these at the very end of chapter 13 of Matthew, which all seem to be about value. Now, chapter is all full of parables, but these three in particular are about value. It's sort of, you have someone finding treasure, you have someone finding the pearl of great price, and actually, when you get to the next parable in the sequence of these three, it talks about fishermen sort of picking out good fish and bad fish. Now, I'm not going to look at that one tonight, but I just want to give you the context that you know there is another parable that follows that one, so you're aware of just roughly the structure of how the Bible is at that point. But I think it's interesting that there are those three parables about value right at the very end. And I'd sort of kind of came up with the not-so-interesting name of the valuation parables for them in my own little studies of them. But anyway, they're fantastic. So the first thing to say about these parables is that normally when anyone talks on them, the first thing they like to draw out and draw your attention to is the fact that these guys obviously gave up everything they had to pursue either the treasure or the pearl of great price, and that these are metaphors for the Christian faith and Jesus. Now, I'm going to get to that tact, but I'm going to get there in a slightly different way first. So, the first thing I want to focus on is actually the people in the parables themselves. Now, we have two characters. So in my retellings, we have the woman who goes to the car boot sale, or the man who's digging in a field, and we have the merchant in the Pearl of Great Price, or we have the businessman who's a comic collector. Now, do we notice anything in particular about these characters? What's really interesting to note at first is that the man who's digging in a field, looking for... Well, we don't actually know what he's looking for. We don't even know why he's digging in the field. That's the first thing. We just know that he's actually digging in the field for no real discernible reason, which is a bit odd, isn't it, when you think about it? Because there's no context there given as to why he's digging. But from a lot of comment, I'm thinking sort of digging a foundation or something, but no one really knows because you haven't got much to go on. And there's a big contrast there between that guy and the guy we see in the parable about the pearl, because this guy's a merchant. Now, the word that they use in Greek for this denotes a merchant that is actually fairly wealthy. This is someone who's probably a fairly wealthy trade ambassador, someone who's going around and dealing with lots of big companies, lots of sort of high-standing people in society, rather than sort of your market stall trader. And this is sort of obvious by his interest in fine pearls. So what we do know there about the merchant is that he's actually looking for something in particular. He knows he wants pearls, and he's looking for the best of them, which is also quite interesting, because we don't get that kind of background on the labourer who's just digging in the field. Now, let's look at what actually happens in each parable. So the digging man in the field ends up finding a hidden treasure, doesn't he? And so whatever this treasure's in, whether it's a chest, a jar, most people think it's a jar, he finds it, either smashes it open or lifts the lid off, has a look, and sees all these riches inside, sees this treasure. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I'm no expert in gold, silver, jewels, that kind of stuff. But I know when I open a chest and see that kind of stuff in there, the last thing I'm going to be thinking is, oh, how much is that worth exactly? I just know that I've stumbled across something that's probably very, very valuable. And I think that's the mindset that this guy's got here. I don't think he's any expert. We're not given any clue that he's someone who knows his stuff about finding treasure in field. Unlike the picture that Mark put up, he's not someone wandering around with a metal detector trying to find something of value in a field. He's digging for whatever reason he's digging and stumbles upon this mother load. And he's excited, isn't he? His immediate response is excitement, because we read that in his joy, he went and sold all that he had. Which is quite interesting, isn't it? Like, off the top of my head, that sounds like purely he's being fed by emotion, doesn't it? It sounds like his motivations are entirely coloured by this discovery that he's just made. And we can kind of read that, sit back a bit and go, wait, mate, what are you doing? Like, that's crazy. Why are you going out and selling everything to get this treasure? That's madness. But again, it's kind of hard to put ourselves in that situation at that time, isn't it? I mean, none of us have ever experienced winning the lottery and gone, oh, you know what we can do now? We can sell our house. We can buy a new one. We can buy a bigger one. We could buy one with a swimming pool, one with a tennis court, one with all that kind of stuff. And that's the kind of thing that's going on in his head. He's thinking, oh, I can find this. I can go and do what I want now. I've got this amazing amount of treasure. But I can't tell anyone because they'll take my treasure. So he acts completely selfishly and reburies it, doesn't he? He actually puts it back where it was, then sells everything he has, then wanders to the owner of the field and goes, all right, mate, can I buy that field? The guy's like, yeah, sure. So he gives him over everything he has, whether this was a fair price, whether this was literally he just said, I want that field, take everything. And the owner of the field's like, oh, yeah, sure, take it. It's yours. Because he doesn't think there's anything of value there. He just thinks it's a bit of grass, bit of pasture land maybe. But actually, the guy who's traded everything he knows realizes that he's picked up something pretty valuable in there, even if no one else knows there's something there. Now, let's contrast this with the merchant. Now, this merchant is clearly, as we said earlier, looking for something specific. So when he finds this pearl of great price, this guy's shrewd. This guy is not going to be taken for a ride. So we can probably guess that this guy knows a little bit about pearls, considering he's been buying them, he's collecting them. When you collect something, you tend to know a few things about it. I remember when I was much, much younger, week in, week out, my grandparents would always buy me a dinosaur magazine. And with this magazine would come a little fossil, which was quite cool. I've still got them somewhere in my house. I don't know where they are. I had a look for them when I went home this evening after finishing writing this talk. And sort of as I collected these magazines and learnt more and more and more about these fossils, I was like, well, that's a rubbish one because that bit's missing and oh, it's all jaggedy and part of the shell is not been preserved properly. And so I learned more and more and more and recognized which ones were good and which ones were bad compared to someone who previously had no knowledge. And this is kind of what we can imagine this guy doing here. Now, I've done a bit of research on sort of what people look for in pearls when they go searching for them, and the experts judge them on five things. Now, there's luster, which is how shiny the pearl itself is. So you don't really want one that's very dull or not bright, but so the shinier it is, the more valuable it is. The surface of the pearl itself. So you know sometimes you get those little blemishes in jewels. Sometimes the surface is darker in some places than it is in others, or there's like a splotch somewhere. Those are the kind of things that knock the value down. So if there's no blemishes, no marks on it at all, that pushes the price up. There's the shape. So funnily enough, pearls sometimes get stretched out as they're made in the natural process of them being made. I had no idea that was the case. I thought they were always round. But apparently they get stretched out and knocked out of shape, and those that are perfectly spherical are worth more money again. And then you move on to size. Pretty obvious one, that one. The bigger it is, the more valuable it is. I think the biggest one that you tend to see on sale is something like 20 millimetres in diameter. So that's not massive, is it? That's not huge. That's like 2 centimetres. But again, size matters when it comes to jewellery. And the last one is colour. Now, colour's a bit of an interesting one because it depends more on the preference of the person as to how they value the colour. But it's something that experts look for. Now, so this guy is probably not to the same degree as a modern pearl expert does, but there's probably some of this going on in his mind when he's looking at the pearl. And he looks at it, weighs it up, and goes, this is worth a lot. This is worth probably all that I have. So what's interesting is that there is that lack of joy in his response to going and selling everything. There is no sort of indication that he's happy about going and doing this. But I think we can comfortably say that he's made up his mind, and it's a decision he's more than comfortable with. But because he's sort of been scientific about it, because he's sort of taken a dedicated approach to it, he's taken the emotion out of the situation, and it's a controlled, calm decision. Now, I've given you a lot of analysis for something that basically amounts to 8 lines and 2 words in the church Bible. That's not very much at all. But I think actually when we sort of take this out of the parable setting and try and make this apply it to the real world that Jesus was making a point about, I think there's a real cool aspect there. And quite frankly, I've never spotted it before until I spent some time digging into this and praying about it and really taking some time to try and understand what Jesus may be saying here. Now, I think what's being said, in part, I don't think this is the main message, but you'll see where I'm going with this. I think what we're seeing here is that Christianity is, in effect, reaching all kinds of people. So we have two different types of people here. We have one who's sort of quite emotional, someone who's maybe not even prone to thinking, but sort of when they're going through their daily life, someone who's not particularly looking for meaning in anything, someone who's not particularly philosophical in the way they approach the world. Actually, sometimes God will come down and meet them. Sometimes they find Jesus in the most unexpected of places. I don't think the guy expected to find treasure in the corner of that field, but he did. And sometimes that's what happens. You think of a few people, you can think of a few examples in the Bible. You can think of people like Paul. He certainly didn't expect to meet Jesus on the road to Damascus. And then what you have on the flip side of that is you have the merchant, the person who's wandered around, collected pearls. So he spent his time looking at religions, thinking about different philosophies, thinking about the way the world works and what's the best way to live. And so you could even say that actually he's taken the pearls of wisdom from each of these different ideologies, these different religions, these different philosophical viewpoints, and constructed his own by collecting them and storing them up. But yet, when he comes across the great pearl, he goes, this is far better than anything else I've come across. This is better than my amalgamation of everything. This is better than whatever it is. But I've got to have it. I've got to give up everything else. And so it's interesting. And for me personally, when I looked at that and that sort of hit me, I was like, wow, that's interesting. Who do I see myself as being in this story? Am I more like the joyful man who found the treasure in the field, or am I more like the merchant? I think for me, I identify a bit more with the merchant, and those of you who've heard my testimony can probably understand why I think I identify with him a bit more. But I think for the majority of us, actually, we're a combination, aren't we? We're not just one or the other. It's never really that black and white. And so there will be a moment where we felt we've encountered God completely unexpectedly, and there'll be other times where we've really grappled with something and wrestled with something and really thought about something. And then we go, actually, yeah, this is right, this is truth. And so, actually, we've spent a lot of time now looking at the differences between the two parables, haven't we? And so I want to go back to the similarity I spoke about earlier, the fact that they both give away everything they own to really take hold of the pearl of great price or the treasure they find in the field. And I think this is the key element of the parable. This is the thing that most commentators spent most of their time on. This is the crux of the matter, if you will. And actually what it is that the kingdom of heaven is something that is so valuable and so worthwhile that it's worth giving up everything for. Now, even though these people have come through completely different paths to get to where they are, they've both come to the same decision. They've both given up everything they have to possess this thing. And actually, in reality, as we looked at the merchant and as the laborer who's digging in the field, these are two probably very, very different material situations. The merchant is quite wealthy. I mean, you've got to be pretty wealthy if you can go out and afford to spend your spare money on pearls, right? They're not cheap even today. But back then, they were the stuff of royalty, the real sort of privileged people in society. You wouldn't just find anyone wandering around with a bunch of pearls around their neck. So he obviously, maybe in absolute terms, probably had to give up more than the day laborer to get a hold of that treasure. But actually, 100% is 100%. No matter how you look at it, isn't it? You can only give what you've got. And it's often the surface things that distract us, isn't it? We often think, well, I'm clearly giving up more than you are, or something like that, or the other way around. And actually, it's not about that. It's about our personal situation. It's about our sort of connection with God at that point. And when we look at Christ's asking price, as it were, it's, if you give me all of you, I'll give you all of me. Which leads to a rather familiar equation, doesn't it? Nick? Oh, there we go. For those of you who were there a few years ago, we did something which I think it was on the talk of John the Baptist saying that he must increase, I must decrease. But it's this idea that actually Jesus is infinitely greater than we are. And whenever we choose to give up whatever we've got, whatever we possess, we're actually going to get something that is far, far greater than anything we own. That's something I find refreshing every single day. And it's not easy, because you often think, well, but do I really want to give that to you? Because, you know, I don't know. I don't know if you've got something that's better than that. But in my experience, every time I delve a little bit deeper, I give a little bit more of myself, God gives back just an exponential amount. And I just want to say, try and bear that in mind as you walk. Try and bear that in mind as you go day to day, when there's something that you're struggling with, and there's something that you're finding hard to sort of let go of because you think it's so important, it's so crucial to who you are. Actually, it's so much more rewarding just to be able to let it go and feel the freedom in that. And I just want to ask us to be quiet now. Father God, I want to thank you for how you speak to us through your word, how you reveal yourself to us through its pages. And Father, I thank you for the fact that we're not all the same. The fact that we all have different journeys, we all have different triggers, different points in our lives where you have made yourself real, Father, and we thank you for that. And we also thank you for those moments where we have to sit down, we have to grapple, we have to wrestle with the truth at certain times. And Lord, I just want to pray for all of these guys, Lord, as they continue their lives, their walks, I just want to ask that you would continue to reveal yourself to them. Help them to not be afraid to wrestle with the tough questions. Help them to know the freedom that comes when they choose to give things to you. When they choose to trust you just that little bit more than they do already. I pray that you would anoint them with your Holy Spirit, Father, and you would really take them out of this place, Lord, and use them powerfully wherever they go.